Hi, everybody.
Sally.
20 years. I was like only 10 years old going when I was. I don't remember them taking us so young, though, back in those days. Anyways, I really want to thank you for giving me the pleasure to be here today. It is it's pretty awesome to be in recovery. It is really amazing. I mean, the miracle is, I see Marge and I, I have six kids, and when my oldest was, I wanted to be the best parent, and so we went to Lutheran General Hospital and got involved in a parent group, and Marge was there with her child, who was 26 at the time. Just a small world, these little pockets, Danny and Val, and, you know, some of you that, my wonderful home group, my homies that are here. Anyway, a lot of miracles in the program. I felt like I had a lot to tell you and to share with you, so I wrote a lot down. So I'm going to be reading a lot for the sake of time. My story is probably very similar to yours in terms of background, and I really appreciated your sharing, Jim. You know, having the dysfunctional home, whether it's from an alcoholic home or from anything else, and just the feelings that we have, and the denial and the shame and all that transpires. And I was one of four. My dad was alcoholic. I was the firstborn girl and thirdborn child, and I really loved my family. And this face that you see now is a face that I really worked on really keeping that smile, kind of like the Joker smile, you know, was painted on. I learned that. Because, see, if I had the smile on my face, then you wouldn't really know what was happening in my family, and I couldn't tell you anyways because we've got that sense of loyalty, you know, and weren't supposed to let anybody know. And God forbid if I did let you know, then how deep would that emotion go? How much would come out? I felt like I would just like internally just everything would come up. Anybody know that feeling? You know, like you couldn't put a lid on it once it would start. It is amazing to me how much energy, when I think about how much energy I expended on trying to keep everything under wraps. That's a lot of work. Honestly, I think that's more work than work in the program. And working really through these steps. The difference is, too, I didn't know that I had any support back in those days. I really did, in terms of some of my family that did care, but we weren't supposed to talk about it. You know, my favorite aunt, who is still my favorite aunt, and other people. And so I really did expend a lot of energy out of that and trying to just keep the lid on it. And I walked around with a lot of shame and a lot of guilt because of what I thought I could do back in those years growing up that I really couldn't do, didn't have any power over, like when Dad would beat up my brothers and I would be relieved hiding in my room saying, I'm so glad it's not me, but hearing the screams of my brothers and then feeling so bad that was happening, and then how do I defend them? And like, really, to my dad, who was like Jackie Gleason, that's how my dad looked. They could probably have been twins. That was my father in demeanor and in looks, physique, everything. There was a lot of wonderful things about my parents that the alcoholism took. The sadness of that was profound in my life. In those years, it's kind of funny, all these years later, just to allow myself to just kind of go back there. And I think some of the sadness is not sadness, it's gratitude because I'm not there anymore. I mean, my dad died when I was 22. My mom is still living, and she's one of my dearest friends. I just really love my mom. My mom's in Al-Anon, and my dad died when I was 23, but prior to his death, I was fortunate enough to have some good years with my dad, and I'm very thankful for that. But as a child, I needed to do just what was told of me. There were no discussions, no options, no debates. Feelings were definitely not considered. There was an undercurrent of uncertainty and fear and inconsistency. It was fear-based action in my family. The motivation of that fear was because we didn't want to get hurt, didn't want to get pounced on. You know, I wasn't physically abused, but verbally and emotionally, certainly. And the berating. You know, I think I am so sensitive to beratement today because I know what that did to my family. Just, you know, expose what was happening, talk about that, but then to talk and talk and talk and talk, and before you know it, I'm underground, and then you're still talking about all these things that I did or you thought that I did, and that was a big thing, big reason for the fear in my family. Living day in and day out in the crisis and the trauma, the scenario of eruptions caused me in my life to be very hyper sensitive to the business of family matters. Concern, but also guilt. Those feelings of gratitude that it was my brothers, as I say, being beaten out of me. Feelings of guilt for not speaking up for all the injustices I saw or was part of. Anger that I felt that I couldn't express because I didn't know how. Or was too afraid to let my voice be heard. And then considering, do I have a voice? Is it that significant? The dichotomy between silence in my home and rage vacillated like the weather. Those explosions were like volcanoes. We all knew that we had Mount St. Helens in our foundational structure of our home, but we just hoped that it wouldn't blow for another 50 years. That it would stay inactive, and that it would not excrete all of its poisonous gases and smoke and the lava that would leave that path of destruction. In my recovery process, it has been very insightful for me to examine the family system of my parents and to ask about it to my mom and to my dad. My father and I went on, and my mom went on, a wonderful 1980 New Orleans AA conference. It was an amazing conference. And I remember walking the streets with my dad and my mom, and we saw this homeless person, and he was just, I have really a heart of compassion. And I just wanted to go over there and take him shopping and get him cleaned up. I mean, he had these long fingernails, and they were full of dirt and this long, gangly hair, and he was very thin and very dirty. And I said, "Dad, look at him. He really needs AA, Dad." And my father said, "Ellie, it is not for people that need it. It's for people that want it." Here we're in this convention, this of I don't know how many thousands of people were there, but he said he probably doesn't want it, Elle. And that stuck with me, and I have used that throughout my life to think about desire, because in desire I found in my life that if I really want something, I'm going to take the effort to go after what that is. Doesn't mean it's not going to be easy, but one thing I have learned is that things that have been most difficult for me are the things I treasure most. They are the most valuable to me if I have put in some blood, sweat, and tears about something. It's not the things that have come easy in my life. It is not the easiness of life. It is the things that have been hardships that I have learned to really love and appreciate. Even people in my life that have been difficult. I had a mother-in-law that just passed that I knew for 30 years, and my mother-in-law was 94. And she was really a thorn in my side. She was actively drinking for a long time and then didn't drink, but certainly never joined program either. And she was really I never met anybody like her, and that wasn't a compliment. But my mother-in-law taught me about life. She taught me how I didn't want to be. She taught me how when somebody is so bitter and angry and decides not to let it go, what it does, not only to you as a person, whoever that you is, in this case it was my mother-in-law, but to everybody around her. As my family grew, we've got six children, and as Ron and I married and our family grew, and we had the kids getting older. People, you know, we get together on our family functions, and my children would say, "Oh, we're going to grandma's today. Which one?" You know, and it was that kind of philosophy. I mean, thinking in their mind, they didn't really want to go to that grandma who was negative and cutting and cold. So she really taught me a lot. I became a very forthright person in my life with a lot of integrity that I believe came from the difficulty of my mother-in-law. Because I thought, Ellie, you have got to change, get strong emotionally, physically, spiritually, or you are going to drown in this marriage. Not only my relationship with my mother-in-law, but in the marriage, because of the whole difficulty that was with being, you know, having my mother-in-law be my mother-in-law. But, you know, I learned to love her. It's one of the greatest gifts I feel like I learned, is to love the unlovable, because I desired to have a good relationship with her as best I can. And when she died in April, we were all around her, and it was quick, but it was, we were just able to be all there. And I was able to look at her and say, "Mom, I really do love you. And thank you for what you gave me." Well, it's nothing that my mother-in-law wanted to give me. It was just how she was and how I decided to be, being in that relationship with her. And there's a great richness that came from that. The insights that I learned to ask of my dad and my mom was really valuable to me. To be brave enough to say, "Could we talk about those years?" You know, going to a counselor and the counselor saying, "Okay, Ellie, tell me about things." And I'd say how thankful I was. I only had one alcoholic parent, not two. And he'd say, "Yeah, but had you considered that maybe you have been emotionally abandoned? Have you ever considered that you didn't get what you needed from either one of your parents?" Oh, my goodness, that just hit me like a ton of bricks. And I didn't want to accept it, but it was true. It was true. And so then I had to go to my mom because I thought, okay, now I got this. And I had to check it out with my mom. I said, "Mom, is it true? This is what, you know, blah." She said, "Elle, it is. I'm sorry. It was that way. I didn't have enough to give you. I was so worried about where the money was going to come from. And would your dad come home? And I have four children, and I have no job, and I'm a housewife. And I just wasn't sure, Elle." And you know what? Just giving myself a time to listen to my mom, even though I was like, "Oh, you're kidding. All these years I was just defending that you were there for me emotionally. And now to find out that you weren't there for me." But, you know, I wasn't angry going to her. I really feel God blessed me because I had a soft heart about it. And I just said, "Mom, could you just talk to me about that?" And, you know, honestly, being a mother myself and having six children myself, I pray that when my children continue in their journey through life and they come to me and they say, "Hey, Mom, when you know," I hope that my children will be as forgiving with me as I feel I have been with my mom and my dad. And my mother and I, because of that difficult conversations that were more than one in those years, you know, I developed a love for my mom that I never knew before. And she said vice versa. The pretentiousness of things were just melting away because my mom was the trooper. You know, if we look good, everything was fine. You know, here come the family. Aren't they so beautiful and wonderful? And, you know, it was just horrible at home. You know what I'm talking about, right? Yeah. And so the sufferings, the disappointments, the deep hurts, the sorrows, the things that couldn't change. There were no tools to work through the hardened ground that had become so solid and so overgrown with weeds beyond our control. I'm a gardener. I had to throw that in there. But the gift of our wonderful program, my wonderful program, is that I have had the benefit of program, of fellowship, of God, of friends, I mean, I really have great and rich friends. I know there's people that don't have any friends. I can't imagine that personally, but I know they're out there. But that's not the case here. And, you know, I'd like to say, if anybody's sitting in this room and you feel you don't have friends, please open up your eyes and look around, because there is such a richness we have here. Sharing understanding, gleaning wisdom, strength, and hope from others who know how I feel. How wonderful and miraculous that this is. The sense of healing all by itself, just knowing that I can attend a meeting, I can come, just bring the body, the mind will follow. We know that slogan, right? To share, to listen, to receive comfort, insight, hope, love, and forward change in my life. I have decided long ago I was going to break that cycle of dysfunction within myself and within my family. Now, I'm here to tell you, I don't have the perfect family. I wish I did. I don't, and I won't, because we live on Earth. It's not happening here. But I do say that my life is a whole lot better. My kids don't know what I knew growing up, and I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful. I pray that the dysfunction will lessen its hold more and more through the years. The things that worked very well as a child for me, you know, hearing that screaming going on, hearing that stuff happening, you know, what did I do? I went in my room, I pulled up the covers, I laid in bed, and if I happened to be in the frontal war zone, I just, you know, Lost in Space? How many of you know that show? Okay, probably some of us, please, I'm not that old. Okay, so Lost in Space, okay, everybody get in the ship, the force field, get the force field, right? And you'd see like the monsters out there, and the force field would come up, and you'd see everybody with that relief on the other end. All right, is everybody in? All right, whew, that's so good. Well, you know what? I did that with my emotions. Like, I'm right in the front, right there, and the force field, go up. I'd see you, you're there, but you're not getting me because I put it up. I would turn my ears off. I'm not listening to you. I'm looking at you, and you're going, whoa, 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 but I'm not hearing you. I'm not hearing you. I'm not feeling you. I see you, but nothing else. Well, that worked for a long time for me. But unfortunately, when I married especially, wasn't working too good anymore. There would be a conflict. My husband wanted to talk about something. He's been my husband 28 years now. Known each other 31, so we know each other pretty well. And he'd say, Ellie, you are not hearing me. Uh-huh. Like, no, you're not hearing me. What did I just say? Did you hear what I just said? And I'd have to say, no. I'm looking at you. I want to hear what you're saying because I can see that you're upset. I perhaps offended you, something. But something inside of me just went, and it happened at the worst times. I didn't want it to happen then, but it did. And so I had to learn to take that wonderful friend from my childhood and get rid of it. It's like some of the old friends that were not really my friends, they had to go so I could grow. And so that's what happened. And I did learn things like that. And that's probably one of the best examples I can tell you in my recovery. And I'd like to tell you that I have perfectly fine with that now, but I still have some difficulty. But it's much better than it was. I have learned to value my home over all else. The safety and the security that I work so hard for in my family, that it is God-filled, that my life is very busy. I'm a special ed teacher, mother of six, five still home, very active in my church and with my marriage and blah, 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 blah. You get the point, you know. But the thing that I am so thankful for is the fact that I really have a passion for living today. If you ask me how I'm doing, I'm not going to tell you how I'm doing unless I really feel you want to know. And if I really want to tell you. I really work hard on integrity in my life. Even the little things of life. My daughter comes up to me the other day, and she says, hey, Mom, I was supposed to run 2 miles, and could you please sign this paper because, you know, you have to say that I ran 2 miles. And I said, Julia, she's 13, eighth grade. She said, oh, no. I said, right. You know I can't sign that paper, right, because you didn't run the 2 miles. And I'm not in integrity if I sign that paper. And you're putting me in a compromising situation, he asked me. Sorry, Mom. And she leaves. You know, it's nice to know that my kids see me more in that way today because I'm working on it. There's no halo here, but I tell you, I have done a lot of hard work. And just to share a little bit with the 12 steps, the key words in some of the 12 steps for me. I'm not going to pull out my, I had some visual aids, but for the sake of time, I'm not going to do that. But in my bag, I have a dog collar, and then if my dog, Bailey, goes beyond the parameters, she gets shocked, okay? Okay, that's step one for me. Like, my life is unmanageable. So I was consistently trying to go out of the bounds, knowing that if I cross there, I'm getting shocked. But you know what? What was over there looked a whole lot better to me than what I thought I had here. So I was getting shocked quite a bit. That's step one for me. It's unmanageable. That's how my life was. All the times I injured myself through bad relationships, costly relationships. You talked about that dependency, Jim. I am very thankful to God I did not marry my God, little G, that I had for a couple years. I think I would be dead today, honestly. He was a police officer, gun was there several times. You mad at me, Ellie? Pick it up. Go ahead. You know what? It was God's grace that I didn't pick up that gun. I mean, truly. So unmanageable, yes. I'm thankful that I've had the experiences so that when I sponsor some women, when I'm talking to them, that I can say, you know, I've had that. They say, oh, well, you don't know what it's like, you know. I said, oh, no, let me tell you. Oh, no, I definitely have stuff in my closet, too. So when I focus on starting my day with my God, who is my higher power, I ask for help. That's how I start my day. I get strength and a desire to please him more and more in my life. In all that I do, in the 24 hours that lies ahead, step two, I have a candle. That's step two for me, a candle. It lights the way. Because when God restored me to sanity, I got a sense of hope, a brightness, a light for my life. I could start to, you know, if you have light in the room, you don't have shadow, right? I was bringing a little bit of light and a lot of shadow. You know, I aborted when I was 17. I did lots of stuff that I don't feel good about. I had lots of stuff that I didn't feel, you know, made me very worthy. Matter of fact, should make me feel shameful, that I felt I just was carrying, you know. When I came to step two and it says, restore me to sanity, I said, Lord, me carrying this stuff, all of this stuff is insane because I have an opportunity to live today, to live this fabulous life. So that's insanity if I hold on to it. When I have had success with letting go of hurts, injustices, my pride, with all, with my attitude, forwarding conversations when there has been disharmony in a relationship, that's sanity today. It's also bravery, because I don't know about you, but I don't like conflict. And God helps me to meet the challenges with success in him. That's a prayer that I made up, and my kids know it by heart, and they're leaving for school in the morning, my fifth grade and eighth grader, and I say, okay, all right, Mom, I pray, God, please help me meet challenges with success in you. Right, because you cannot do them by yourself, I tell them. And that is my definition of sanity. Step three is I brought an extension cord, made a decision to choose to not be all about me anymore, but to make a decision to let God help me. And so I have an extension cord that could be pretty long. I bet you guys might have them too. I get to choose today. I have to choose. I'm not a puppet with God pulling my strings, making me do whatever he wants me to do. I have a choice. Today I have decided that God is his will for my life is what I want. Because you know what? His will is better than my will, always. Praying is just conversations with God. It's just talking, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us. Why? Because he knows what's best for me. All those times that I felt what was best and didn't work out so well. caused a lot of destruction for me in relationships, regrets that will stay with me forever. But the pain doesn't have to stay. That's the difference for me. I will always regret certain things that I've done, but the pain associated with it does not have to stay. And when I talk to my children, and when I have talked to them about some of these things, because my kids range, you know, the older ones are, you know, 19, 21, 24, 26. And so as I went into conversation about my life with them, they say, well, Mom, how can you tell us this when you did this? And I say, because I did that. That's why I know it's better to do this. And that's very powerful. I decided long ago that I didn't have to walk in a shameful place. I don't have to speak truth to my to people if I didn't live in it at a time in my life. I exactly know that it's the thing to do. I'm going to zip through some of this. Praying, conversations with God. Okay, causing destruction for me in relations. Regrets that will stay with me forever. But the pain doesn't have to. I sure wish, okay, I got to move down here. In step three, it is God's power in me, which makes it easier to carry out anything in my life today. I do strive very hard to work in integrity in my life today as a teacher, a mother, et cetera, et cetera. I brought a mirror for the inventory because I really have to look at me. And it's a three-way mirror because I got to look at all sides of me, not just the frontal, but the sides, and then like how am I looking in the back kind of thing. To really look, and I really need and want to be moral in my life today. There is right and wrong. The wrong got me into trouble. The right keeps me feeling like, yes, that's success. Fearless. I pray God helps me to be fearless in my life. I recently took over teaching an autistic class. I'm as a special ed teacher. I really got to be fearless every day because this is hard work. My desire to get better and live fully and stronger than I ever have before is more and more of a possibility because of having done the four-step inventory, listing pluses and minuses, good and bad, and then having somebody with me in step five that I can talk to. Somebody trusted, which happens to be my sponsor for over 20 years. I brought glasses because it's a perspective. I give them to her because she gave me a perspective on myself, knowing me all these years. And now when I call her up, even by the tone of my voice or the volume, she says, Elle, what's going on? Okay, well, when can you meet with me? Because I'm not, some of this I just don't want to flippantly say in 10 minutes. How much time do you have, you know? It's a release by sharing my past and my present in step five. It's recognizing the importance of forgiving myself and others. And I just want to pause there for a moment and just say, if you have not experienced freedom in forgiveness of all people, I really urge you to try that. The people in my life, for the sake of time, I'm not going into all of this. Just suffice it to say that I have had great difficulties in my life forgiving the unforgivable. A molestation when I was younger, a favorite uncle, blah, 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 you know. But you know what? I realized that if I didn't forgive him, even though he never was sorry, might still not be sorry, I confronted him, wasn't, you know, blah, 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 I still made a choice to forgive him. Because not forgiving him keeps rotten inside of me. I brought a rotten apple. That would be me. Would you like to have? No, you would not like to have my rotten apple. But I was rotting myself for not forgiving. And the blessings came in doing that. I brought some tools for being entirely ready because I came to a point in my life of just saying I needed to surrender. I wanted to surrender. It was a whole lot harder to carry it than to give it up. And I brought, humbly asking him, making a list. I brought a pad, making amends. I brought a container. That's filled with some stuff, you know, to say, you know, sometimes an amends is a physical. Sometimes it's bringing flowers or a dinner to a hurting friend who I injured and saying, I'm sorry for you and would you accept this? Journaling in step 10, continuing to take personal inventory. Here's one for you, and I've got a couple more things to say and I'm going to close. When I really want to know how I'm doing, Step 10, I ask my husband. Yep. I ask my kids. I ask my friends. Guess what they tell me? I don't always like it. Usually I don't like it. And I might even deny it. But I'll tell you one thing. I do consider it. And then I usually go back and say, okay, I thought it was a little better there, but I see that I have some work to do. And so I sought through prayer and meditation. I brought my Bible and a red book because it is seeking. It's a active verb. Here's my teacher in me. An active verb, seeking, sought, that I did it, but I'm still doing it. And in step 12, I brought a butterfly because I'm really free today. I'm free. And, you know, sometimes people say, Ellie, you have such joy. You must have had just like a great life. Great. I said, no. No. I do now. I have a great life now. And still he has a lot of difficulty. But I love my life because I'm working on it. I'm working hard to have a good life because I only get one chance. And I don't want to be 80, 90 years old, God willing, I make it that long, and look back at these years now in my 50s and say, oh, man, you could have done better or whatever. I want to thank you. I want to thank you for your fellowship. I want to thank you because you've given me a lot of gifts. I started ACOA back in 81 and started our group in 84 in Libertyville. And it has been a blessing to see our group grow through the years. And I used to laugh and say, well, I had no children when I joined, and I had six kids as I was been in program. You do grow in the program, not always in that regard. But so retreats, fellowship, love, laughter, you know, it's all at our fingertips. And it's up to us. It was up to me. And I'm grateful I said yes. And I thank you for being here.